Welcome to the God's Peculiar People podcast, where we learn about the lives and characteristics of God's people. In the last episode, we looked at the fact that Paul had been in a hurry to get to Jerusalem before the day of Pentecost. He came carrying a contribution for the needy Christians at Jerusalem, and his arrival must have been made must have been with some anxious expectations. He knew that chains awaited him in Jerusalem. He knew that he would be delivered into the hands of the Gentiles, yet he was willing not only to be bound, but to die for the name of Jesus. And in this episode of the God's Peculiar People podcast, we will look at the arrest and journey to Rome of the Apostle Paul. So we look kind of quickly at why Paul was in Jerusalem to start with and what happened with the church. Let's look at that in a little bit more detail. I did a little bit more reading on that. And it says and the brethren received him gladly. They were glad that he was there, went with his companions to visit James and the elders, and they counseled Paul in view of some things. Let me read a little bit about what their concern was with Paul and why he ended up being in the temple. So he declared unto them all the things God had wrought among the Gentiles by his ministry. And when they heard it, Acts 21 verse 20, they glorified the Lord and said to him, "Thou seest, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe, and they are all zealous of the law. And they are informed of thee, that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. What is it therefore? The multitude must needs come together, for they will hear that thou art come. Do therefore this that we say to thee. We have four men which have a vow on them. Take them, and purify thyself with them, and be at charges with them, that they may shave their heads, and all may know that those things whereof they were informed concerning thee are nothing, but that thou thyself also walkest orderly, and keepest the law. As such in the Gentiles which believe, we have written and concluded that they observe no such thing, save only that they keep themselves from things offered to idols, and from blood, and from strangled, and from fornication. Then Paul took them in, and the next day, purifying himself with them, entered into the temple, to signify the accomplishment of the days of purification, until that an offering should be offered for every one of them." Now this is interesting because this purification, days of purification, is meant to signify the need of an offering until an offering should be made for every one of them. Now this is where there is some confusion and contention about why Paul went and did this. People say that Paul acted ignorantly, not realizing that the law of Moses was no longer binding. Some believe that Paul acted hypocritically, like Peter did back in Antioch. You can read about that in Galatians 2 verses 11 through 13. And others said Paul acted consistently with what he actually taught. But it is a little bit odd. Why do you, as a Christian, why are you going and having a ritual purification to signify the accomplishment of the days of purification until an offering should be offered for every one of them? We don't have time to delve deeply into that. We will, at some point in the future, we'll come back and look at that potentially. But for now, this is an area where it's, why did Paul do this? Was it ignorance? Was it hypocrisy? Or was he acting consistently? Which, according to some people, is the case. Regardless, at this point, we are so far past that. Why Paul did it, we can ask him maybe someday in the future. If we feel at that point in eternity, we feel it's important to ask him, we can ask him. But we can't go back and change why Paul did it. So moving forward to his arrest in the temple. So we know that he was there when the 7 days were almost ended, and the Jews which were in Asia, when they saw him in the temple, they stirred up all the people and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man that teacheth all men everywhere against the people and the law and this place, and further brought Greeks also into the temple, and hath polluted this holy place. For they had seen before with him in the city Trophimus, an Ephesian, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. And all of the city was moved. They were upset. They ran together. They took Paul. They drew him out of the temple. The doors were shut on the temple to keep him and anyone he might have been bringing with him out. And as they went about to kill him, tidings came unto the chief captain of the band that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. He immediately sent soldiers, centurions, they ran down into them, and when this mob of people around Paul saw the chief captain and the soldiers, they left beating Paul. They kind of separated themselves from him. And the chief captain came near, took him, commanded him to be bound with two chains, and demanded who he was and what he had done. And the people were in such a tumult that, you know, some people were crying one thing, some another, and he couldn't know the certainty of what was happening. So he commanded Paul to be brought into the castle. And Paul requests to speak to the people. So he's allowed to speak, and, you know, he goes through and he declares again his testimony, what God has done, how God appeared to him on the road to Damascus, and he goes on and on. He talks about Stephen in Acts 22 verse 20, and it says, and when the blood of the martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death, and kept the raiment of them that slew him. And he said unto me, Jesus speaking to Paul, and he said unto me, depart, for I will send thee far hence unto the Gentiles. And this is when things blew up again. And it says, and when they gave him audience unto this word, and then lifted up their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. So Paul attempts to address the people of Jerusalem, trying to explain and share the gospel with them. He relates the circumstances of his conversion. He refers to the vision on an earlier visit to Jerusalem, but they don't want to hear what he has to say. The enraged mob wants Paul dead. They call for his death. The Roman commander, he prepares to scourge Paul, trying to get information out of him. And then Paul is spared because he reminds and kind of questions if it's lawful to do this to a Roman citizen. Someone goes and tells the captain and the leader and says, hey, this guy says he's a Roman. The chief captain asks Paul about it and finds out that Paul is not just a Roman citizen. He is a free-born Roman citizen. He didn't purchase his citizenship. He was born a Roman citizen. Then he's transported to the Sanhedrin. Chief captain's trying to figure out what's going on. Takes him to the Sanhedrin. There's more dispute there. They attempt to try to get him moved from one place to another with a plot to kill him along the way. And so finally, the chief captain decides to send him to Felix the governor, and Paul is transported to Caesarea and is presented to the governor. Here, Paul is brought before Felix. Felix is a little bit wishy-washy. He allows Ananias the high priest, elders, and an orator named Tertullus to come and share their side of the story while Paul shares his defense against what they're saying. And it goes back and forth, back and forth. Felix procrastinates on making a decision. And Felix, it says that he was willing to show the Jews a pleasure, so he just left Paul bound and didn't do anything about him. He would have Paul come and speak to him. Paul came and spoke with Felix and his wife Drusilla. It says that Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time, for when I have a convenient season, I shall call for thee. So he was convicted by what Paul said, but he didn't want to make a decision. You see him kind of just pushing that aside. And for about 2 years, Paul remained in the same spot. Felix was lenient, allowed people to come and see Paul, speak with Paul, but he would not release him, trying to please the Jews in this manner. And then Porcius Festus came into Felix's room. Positions changed. Festus had gone to Jerusalem, found out from the Jews about Paul, invited them to come down. There's this whole back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so there's a trial arranged between the Jews and Festus. And Paul ends up appealing to Caesar because they want to transport him back to Jerusalem into the hands of the Jews. Paul appeals as a Roman citizen to Caesar, and he is granted his wish to go to Rome to stand before Caesar. So after about 3 trials and 2 years of imprisonment, a little over 2 years of imprisonment in Caesarea, Paul is headed for Rome. Now, we don't have time to look at the entire circumstances of the shipwreck, everything that happened, but we know along Paul's journey, he was placed in the care of Julius, a Roman centurion, who allowed Paul to be joined by 2 friends, that would be Luke and Aristarchus. Their journey ended up with them being shipwrecked on the island of Melita, which is about 60 miles away from Sicily. So they were very close to Rome, just a little bit of a ways away. They finally make it to Rome, where Paul is finally able to speak to the Roman citizens face to face. He's able to share the gospel with them. He's spoken to them through letters before, but this will be the first time he's able to speak with the Romans face to face. So Paul was placed under house arrest here in Rome, and he waited 2 years to make his appeal before Caesar. But he wasn't idle during this time. He received many visitors. He was not forbidden or told he couldn't teach those. He had guards who were there. So those guards got to hear what he was speaking to the elders and to people as well. He would write additional letters while he was here. He wrote the epistle to Philemon in about 61 to 62 AD, and his purpose was to secure the forgiveness for Onesimus. He'd met Onesimus and was appealing to Philemon for him. He wrote to the Colossians in, again, 61 to 62 AD to warn them against the Colossian heresy. He would write to the Ephesians in 61 to 62 AD to remind Christians of their spiritual blessings and responsibilities. And then he would write the epistle to the Philippians in AD 63 to thank the church for their gift and encourage faithfulness. So we see Paul's love and concern for others despite his own circumstances. And this exemplifies the mind of Christ. Paul, oh, he's in prison. He's got his own things going on. What's going to happen before Caesar? And yet he is sending out encouragement to the churches, to the church of Colossae, the church of Ephesus, and the church of Philippi, to remind them to rejoice in the Lord, that the believers are rich in Christ, and to warn them of heresy that could befall them. So he's not self-obsessed with himself, his circumstances, but he's reminding the church of how good God is. We read at the end of Philemon in verse 22, and in Philippians 1 verses 23 through 27 and 2 verse 24, that Paul fully expected to be released from his imprisonment. Now, I don't fully know the facts on all this, but it's believed that he was released and traveled more. Some references are made in epistles such as 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus that seem to give credence to that, and by the testimony of those who came much later, Chrysostom, Jerome, Eusebius, and even Clement of Rome, who lived in the later part of the first century AD, seem to claim that Paul was released, traveled for a few more years, and then would be arrested a second time. So there's some conjectural travels we can look at. So call this almost his fourth missionary journey. Those conjectures are that it's believed that Paul desired to go to Philippi. So it's believed he may have gone to Philippi. He may have gone to see Philemon in Colossae. And it is possible that he may have been visited near Laodicea and Hierapolis, and that he had expressed a desire to travel to Spain. So it's possible he might have traveled to those places. What's more believed to be more authentic facts is that it is believed that he and Timothy went to Ephesus. This is believed to be evidenced from 1 Timothy 1 verse 3 and 3 verses 14 through 15, that Timothy was left at Ephesus and Paul went to Macedonia, and 1 Timothy 1 verse 3, that Paul and Titus made a trip to Crete in Titus 1 5, that Paul went to Miletus where he left Trophimus sick in 2 Timothy 4 verse 20, that Paul returned to Ephesus where he was served by Onesiphorus in 2 Timothy 1 verses 16 through 18, a trip was believed to have been made to Troas, where Paul left a cloak and books with Carpus in 2 Timothy 4:13, that he went to Corinth with Erastus in 2 Timothy 4:20, and that he spent a winter at Nicopolis, Titus 3, verse 12. Now, I haven't had time to look into all of this and see, but that's what is believed to have been additional travels that Paul made between what is believed to be his first and second arrest at Rome. Kind of notice in some of these verses some additional friends that Paul has along the way. He has Timothy, Titus, Erastus, Trophimus, Carpimus, Onesiphorus, Artemis, and Tychicus, Zenas, the lawyer, and Apollos along the way. There's also a couple opponents to the gospel. There's Hymenaeus and Alexander, and then a man named Philetus who joined with Hymenaeus in his false teachings. You'll read about that in 2 Timothy 2 verses 17 through 18. So it's during this in-between time, when Paul is between his Roman captivities, that he writes the first epistle to Timothy. It's believed to have been written from Macedonia, and it was sent to Timothy to instruct him concerning church matters at Ephesus and provide counsel for Timothy's own spiritual progress. Then also the epistle to Titus, and it's to instruct Titus concerning church matters at Crete. So much like Paul's early years of service, where from about 36 to 45 AD, it's a little bit blank. We don't quite know all of what was happening with Paul's life. It seems to be the same here, if this is accurate, that there is a space between Paul's first and second Roman captivity, that there are things that, you know, are taking place. You know, we don't have every detail of what took place. And it's very likely that Paul was released and went about preaching more. What we do know for sure is that Paul was arrested, he was held in Rome, and he was martyred. So whether this was during his first time in Rome, or if that was the only time in Rome, or if it was a second Roman captivity, regardless, we know Paul was held at Rome, and that it was here that he would die in Rome. It's believed that during his second Roman captivity, that this is when he wrote the second epistle to Timothy, and it was to encourage Timothy to stand strong, to preach the word, and to endure hardship, and commit the word to others. So kind of the theme would be to fulfill your ministry. Paul had served a very long time. He had worked tirelessly to share the gospel. He went all across the world sharing the gospel to people, and he was encouraging Timothy to stand strong and to continue his work. Three things we know about Paul from reading his letters to Timothy and to Titus. He expected to die. He knew death was coming. He was not ashamed of Christ, and he was confident. He was confident in what God had done in him and that God would help him along the way. So we don't know a lot about the death of Paul. We don't know all the details that led up to it, but it's believed that Nero died in June 68 AD, and it's believed that Paul was executed before that date, perhaps in the spring of 68 AD or sometime in 67. Now, it's the location. It's believed he was executed on the Ostian Road just outside of Rome by a military escort, and this would be near the present-day Basilica of St. Paul in Rome. And perhaps to avoid sympathy, which his influence had excited, where he had friends even in the palace, he was executed outside of the city. Now, the nature of his death is that Paul was beheaded. Roman citizenship exempted him from torture and from crucifixion. And according to universal tradition, weeping friends took up his corpse and carried it for burial to the subterranean labyrinths. This is according to Clement, Romans 1:5. And Usher also states that there's believed to be an exact date. This is according to Usher, that on the 29th day of June, Paul was beheaded at Rome. Chrysostom affirms without doubt that the day of Paul's death was known with greater certainty than the death of Alexander the Great himself. So we know historians comment on Paul's death. They comment on what they believe the date is, kind of where they think he's buried, things like that. But the Bible does not give us the details behind that. But we know that Paul died in Rome. So the legacy Paul left behind is impressive. He established churches throughout the Roman Empire. He wrote letters that equal about half of the New Testament. And even today, more than 2,000 years later, the influence of Paul's life, labors, and letters continues to be felt around the world. Yet we know Paul would be the first one to give credit to God. He realized that he was not worthy of the opportunities he had to serve God. But through Paul, with his life and labors, God demonstrates his wonderful grace and mercy. We see throughout Paul's life his willingness to be used of God, his willingness to go to the next place, his eagerness to go and share with more and more people. If there was a space in the world that hadn't heard the gospel, he wanted to go and share the gospel with them. He wanted to go to Spain, to Macedonia, everywhere, and share the gospel. And God allowed him to go to many, many places in order to do that. As we wrap this up, I would encourage you to look up missionaries who live in the area where Paul was preaching during this time. Let me tell you a little bit about a project that I had the opportunity to be involved in a number of years ago. There was a missionary who was traveling in Greece, and he visited the city of Thessalonica, where Paul preached. And as he was there, he realized that there weren't really churches there teaching the Bible. There's the Greek Orthodox Church, but there's not a church teaching the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ without works in the city of Thessalonica. And so he reached out to other pastors in his network, and they chose to start a project called Project Thessalonica. The project worked that for a year, different groups from different churches would go and spend a couple weeks in the city of Thessalonica, sharing the gospel, preaching, and establishing a church in that city. That went on for a year, and then a man and his family took on the work for several years, helping to build up a church there in Thessalonica. It's not huge, it's not, you know, will never be a mega church, but it was a church, a presence in the city of Thessalonica to encourage those who wanted to learn the truth of the Bible about that. Now, there's a new man who's taken it on. The first man, his family had to come back to the United States. Another man has taken on that work. His name is Eric Fair. He and his family, I believe, are on deputation right now to get financial support together to be able to go and live there in Thessalonica. Greece is a little bit of an expensive place to live. There's a lot that goes into living in that part of the world. And so that's who I want to highlight. If you would go and look up Eric Fair and his family, I'll try to make sure to leave a link to him and then also to Project Thessalonica that you can read more about and learn about. A church in a city that Paul preached to, that there is a gospel witness to those people still today. The church is reaching out not just to people in Thessalonica, which is amazing, just like Paul would have done, but also reaching out to people of other nationalities, other countries. It's helping to spread the gospel around the world from that point there in Greece. And I have to say, that area is beautiful. I've had the opportunity myself to go twice. I went on the first initial year trip trying to help get things established, and then I was able to go back and help the man and his family who were there for a number of years. They did a tremendous work, very, very faithful to share the good news of Jesus Christ to the people of Thessalonica. And now I know Eric Fair a little bit. I've met him before, and very excited that he and his family are taking up that work there in the city of Thessalonica. So the work that Paul started sharing the gospel with the Thessalonians many, many years ago is continuing today in 2024, and that's very exciting. Very excited that you'd have had a part in helping to spread the gospel there in Greece as well, and be able to show the Thessalonians once again of their need of a savior. But that's all that I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening to the God's Peculiar People podcast. If you have any questions, comments, anything you'd like to know about Project Thessalonica, I might be able to answer or point you in the right direction. Please let me know in the comments, and I'll talk to you guys next time on the next God's Peculiar People podcast.